Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Thank you. My name is Kim Lindsay. I'm part of the leadership team here of Career Connections. And right after lunch, you will hear my laid-off needed job testimony from a couple of years ago. So I won't say too much right now. I'm an instructional designer. I design computer-based training, e-learning for a living. So anyway, our next topic is marketing yourself successfully, effectively. This is about the how do you find out about things and how do you present yourself in these various formats that you've heard of. We're getting a little bit more into the particulars now. We will get a lot more into the particulars in the follow-up sessions. But it's all about who you know. And not what you know. And you've heard that all your life. And it is true. And it's even more true now. But there are many more ways to know some who's than there used to be because of all of the online, the social media, all of the internet aspect of it, and not just snail mail and face-to-face. So we're going to look at a bunch of different marketing methods. And not all of them will be suitable for everybody, and we just pick and choose, you know, just do whatever. And for each job, it might be different that you would be interested in applying for. First, we'll do seeking job opportunities, and then we'll talk about researching. Warm networking. We have this, Marty introduced me to this concept. It's a wonderful thing. A guy named Joe Girard was a salesman, and he figured out that basically everybody has about 250 people in their life who would show up at their funeral or wedding. If you know, if you died, God forbid, but you know, or if you got married, or then these are the people that would be there for you. And it changes a little bit throughout life, but you know, these are your core. This is the core of your warm network. It's not the extent of it, but it's your starting place. These are the people that you need to be telling them that you are interested in finding a new position. If they don't know, they can't help you. If they care enough about you that they would be at your wedding or your funeral, they care enough that they would be, just keep it in the back of their mind. And if they hear about an opportunity to speak up on your behalf or to let you know information that they find out. So this is the place to start with your 250 people. And it is not the ending. And now we have an exercise. Woodrow needs a job, and Rufus is hiring. So I would like Woodrow to come up and stand right over here. He is a C++ Python developer, which is probably not at all what you do in real life. But, and so he's looking for a position. Now, Rufus, and who is our Rufus? And you can stand on the other end over by the door. He is a hiring manager. His company needs a C++ Python developer. The first thing that Rufus does is he asks his HR department representative named Ethel. Who's Ethel? Where's my Ethel? And Ethel can stand next to, actually on the other side of Rufus. Stand next to Rufus. And Ethel, very helpfully, she posts the jobs and she screens applicants that come in. That's one way. And if Woodrow has put his application in, it might get through the screening and it might reach Rufus. But there's another way. Rufus, number two, his son is on the BT Parshman Pee Wee football team. And guess what? Manfred. I know I picked these old-timey names just to, and you want to come on this side of Rufus. Manfred is a franchise owner for his day job, but he also coaches the BT Parchman Pee Wee football team in the evening. He is married to a lady named Mildred. Where's our Mildred? There we go. Uh-oh. You know what? Why don't you go right on this side of me?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. Mildred is married to... Oh, yeah. You don't want to be like... You don't need to be in the bright light. I appreciate that. Thank you for that. She's married to Manfred. She is also a member of the Mitford Matters book club. Anybody here a Mitford fan? Oh, I knew there would be somebody. Well, yeah. So Mildred is a member of that book club. Well, Sonia... And you can be on this side of me. This right here. Right here. Sonia is a library volunteer, and she leads the Mitford Matters book club. She lives at number 6 Privet Drive. Woodrow, number 2. Woodrow lives at number 4 Privet Drive. They're neighbors. But if Woodrow doesn't tell Sonia that he's looking for a job, it can't go down the line. The same thing, I mean, not that the employer is going to, you know, lay their heart out to everybody that they meet, but if he doesn't chat up Manfred, the line breaks at that end. But, you know, you can see that, I mean, you just don't know who you know. I mean, there's a library volunteer, a homemaker, you know, a franchise owner like Chick-fil-A or something. It all, as long as you make yourself, as you communicate with the people in your immediate network, that's how it all works. And I thank you guys very much. That's what we needed. Okay. I'll collect the papers, right? Thanks. Thanks. This seemed to go okay. Maybe we'll use it next time we do this workshop. Our next topic is cold networking. Which is, in my personal personality, this is very hard for me. It's not so hard maybe for Marty and Ken, but this is hard for me. This is really a lot related to cold calling. You have this RAIN acronym in your notes, which is really, really good to remember. R is for established rapport with the person that you are trying to talk to, that you have never met them before in your life, whether you're talking to them face-to-face, you happen to meet them, or whether you have set up an informational interview, whether you are talking to them on the phone. Establish rapport. Ask for advice, because they need to know what you need. If you're just chatting, they don't know. They don't know, you know. I'll have a little bit more of this after we get through the acronym. Obtain information and ask for names. And that's really very important, because everybody knows somebody, as we just saw in the exercise. Even if the person that you happen to be talking to doesn't either have any openings or doesn't have direct advice that they can give you, they might know somebody who can. And people typically... here in Ohio anyway, are very helpful. This is, as I said, it's related to cold calling. And let me tell you, there are online tips everywhere. And this is where I should have brought the mouse up. Because I have this, my mouse, I have this, we'll see. How to... pick someone's brain without being annoying. Soften them up. There's your build rapport. You know, don't suggest a coffee date. Isn't this interesting? This article is from April of this year. So this is very current. There is a ton of information on, advice out on the internet. This somewhere along the way, asking to sit down for coffee became the status quo for requests like this. So, I mean, there are, how much time do you need?
So make your suggesting the alternative in that space.
In that space, they are saying, oops, one more. Let's see, lunch, let's see.
It's the next paragraph.
It is, all right, there we go. Phone call, or stop by their office briefly. Right at the beginning, the end of the day, before or after lunch, go someplace else that the person will already be if they're attending an upcoming industry conference or networking event, professional society meeting, you know, to catch them right before or after that or during a break. So it's just really interesting. I found a lot, there's a ton of articles in this site. I mean, check that out. Career advice, job search, career, just like, you know, there's just, and you know what this tells me? If it was easy to find a job, there wouldn't be these sites. You know? People wouldn't be making their living writing books and, you know, being online authors and stuff like that. If it was easy, all this stuff, you know, think back in, you know, well, I can't really remember, but, you know, in the 50s, right after World War II, I mean, jobs were plentiful. And people didn't have to go to all this trouble to find a job. You just went and filled out an application and you had a job, you know, in a lot of cases. And all of this stuff didn't exist then. The economic situation is different now. And I haven't looked a lot at this website, but it seemed to have a lot of good information. So the point is that there's a lot of information out there. I can't possibly give it to you all right now. But if you remember the RAIN acronym as a starting point, and we will have a lot more about this in the follow-up sessions as well. If it's difficult for you, if you set your goal to be one call a day, you know, whether or not you get to be with somebody, make one call a day. That would be hard for me. But, you know, get through it, just to make one call a day. At the end of the week, you've made 5. At the end of the month, you've made 20, which is 20 people you would not have even tried to call or contact. Even if you get through to a couple of those, say they know somebody or they have something that a piece of advice that they could give you as far as finding a job in your target industry. Let's see. Let's put this someplace where I won't mess myself up. Oh, I did. All right. Large-scale networking. Let's go on to this topic. What percent of job seekers find their next position through networking? What do you think the answer is? 20, 40, 60, 80, 100? 80. You think of that? It is actually 80%. Mm-hmm. Find their next position through networking. And this is current information. I just got off the internet yesterday. So, you've gone through your warm contacts, and you've gone through them to your cold contacts. And there, this is about the other people out there. How do you get to them? You don't want to just go to job seekers meetings because you want to go to meetings where there are people who actually have jobs. That's one thing that in 2009 a lot of people were doing. They'd go to a different job seeker meeting every night. And that can do a lot to keep your spirits up. But if all the people there are unemployed, I mean, unless one of them gets a job and then they remember you, you know, kind of like the butler remembered Joseph, you knew I was gone, you knew that. Other than that, you need to be out there with people who actually have jobs. There are job fairs, of course, you know, where different companies will band together. I mean, it's funny. You're driving down the street and you'll just see like a little sign that says job fair today. I'm thinking, well, I mean, if you didn't happen to drive down that street, but there are those out there. And they're also the big ones. They're publicized in the newspaper and on the radio. Mass networking events, which we had a lot of in 2009. I don't even know if they do these anymore. It was just like a business cards flying, you know. Just everybody come down to the, you know, I don't know, warehouse district or something. I don't know that it was really effective, that it helped anybody, but it certainly got your feet wet and you got you over the jitters about being in those kinds of situations because probably it's not going to help you anyway, so if you messed up, nobody would remember. I would really recommend professional associations. That is, I mean, to me, that's the thing. There are so many groups in Northeast Ohio, you know, all over Northeast Ohio. Some of them have several chapters, one in Akron, one in Canton, one in Cleveland, one in Youngstown. And this is the events calendar from the Cleveland Business Connects magazine, which is also available online. And, I mean, it has a calendar of all the events on any given day. And you're looking for something that relates to the industry that you want to go into, of course. There's also lectures and meetings. The Cleveland Technical Society's Council, I think their website looks different from this now. But this is all the, you know, engineers, you know, aeronautical engineers, like people from Lubrizol, you know, petroleum engineers, and even the library people, they have people on this council, and they list all the different societies' meetings. And to me, I think that if you go to a meeting, say I was looking at one for the electrical engineers, and unfortunately it was the day of another meeting that I needed to go to. I was really bummed because the speaker at the electrical engineer, which I'm not an electrical engineer, they were talking about that huge windmill at Lincoln Electric, like that's one of the biggest ones in the world, and how they designed it and how they built it. I mean, would that be cool to hear about or not? Well, at least it would to me. But if you have that kind of enthusiasm, you know, you see a lecture, even if it's not something that's directly related, if you think that there might be people there that, you know, might be a good cold contact for you, why not? I mean, it will cost you dinner usually, but that's about it if you have the time. This is another interesting thing. This is a meetup page, Eastside Games with Friends. This is a board gaming group. They meet once a week over in Wilson Mills area, and then they have once a month, and they meet in Solon also. Now, if I was, what kind of person might go to this kind of a meeting, and I'm asking you to be imaginative here, what kind of people would you find there that if I was looking for a job in their industry, I'm not saying this very well, why would I target this group? What kind of people might I meet there?
Professionals
in a non-threatening environment. I don't know if anybody here, maybe you're not familiar with the gaming. Techie people, geeky people, computer programmers, you know, those kind of engineers, they're very drawn to these board game type events. So if I was, you know, and why not go? It costs nothing. They meet at like a Panera. You can get a cup of coffee, you know, it's like, and just meet people. And it's not like you have to do these kinds of things, but you can see how you get your creative juices going. Go to Meetup. You do not have to have a login. You can just go to the Meetup site and put in a topic and a zip code, and it'll bring you up meetings. Now, ones that are private, it won't bring up. But ones that are public that anybody that can go to, I mean, so you do not have to have a sign-in or anything like that. Just Google Professional Society Meetings Accountants Cleveland, you know, August 2014, and see what comes up. You can very often find places to go to meet people face-to-face in a semi-structured environment, so it's not so intimidating that you're just out glad handing right and left. Let's see. You can also do volunteer work, which is a classic example, and I'm sure you guys have heard that before. Before you actually attend an event, you're going to want to do some research up front, especially if it's a very targeted thing like a professional society for that job market. It would be nice if you had something of value to share, such as like an article that you'd read on the internet or a book that you've recently read on a topic that, you know, say it's sales. You know, you've read, a book on sales. What's a new one now? Okay, it's Sun Tzu. You know, everybody's always reading The Art of War or if you're in a creative field, like the back of the napkin. If you've read something that so you have something to enter into the conversation, and you're not just there saying, "Hey, I need a job," you know, because that's not going to be your opening line. You're going to be building rapport. Think from the other person's point of view, particularly. Start in a low-risk environment. Say, "Hey, as long as it doesn't cost a lot of money, go to a group that's not related to something that you're interested in, because there really won't be somebody. There might not be anybody there that you know you would be embarrassed in front of." That's what I would say. But it's important to make a good impression. You want to go and make a bad impression. And nobody in this room is probably likely going to make a bad impression. I mean, I've been at professional society meetings and had, you know, people actually make harassing comments, inappropriate harassing type comments. It's unfortunate, and members of the groups look out for each other. I don't want to alarm anybody, too much, but, you know, you're not going to be there all alone, and becoming and going with people. And if you feel insecure about it, take your neighbor, take your friend, take your spouse with you. But it is important to make a good impression. And if you don't feel comfortable that you can make a good impression, then I would say stay home, because it's better none than something that's negative. Does anybody have any questions about this? Okay. These are probably things that you all have thought of and done previously. We're going to move on to e-networking by your professional and social contacts. I would say create an email account just for job search. It will enable you to keep things compartmentalized so that you don't miss a reply in the midst of, you know, all of your family emails. Make sure that your email address is something professional with your name and either numbers or, you know, some kind of a description. You don't want, like, Huggy Bear 101, you know, or that's the one you guys always use. Is that you don't, you want something that sounds professional. Yeah, it is. Yeah, really. it's because people will figure that out. I actually, at my current job, there was a client that we were going to go and meet, and I just Googled her, and on something from her college, which she had been out of college for years, but it was in some kind of a PDF newsletter, and that her email address was something about manga and anime, and it was like, oh, well, that's nice, because now I know she's a sci-fi fan. But I'm sure that she was no longer using that, of course. She was using a professional email. But, you know, people will notice that kind of stuff. LinkedIn is your primary e-networking. This is your online resume, basically. That's the way to look at LinkedIn. This is your online resume. You don't put anything on it that you wouldn't put on a resume. You don't put your date of birth. You certainly don't put your social security number. You don't put your marital status. You don't put personal things. This is a resume. You put your job targets, your experience, your education. There are actually other sites for online CVs. I don't know if you were familiar with that, but there's at least, I think, two. And they are targeted towards CVs. And they would be the equivalent of LinkedIn. Not that you wouldn't want to do LinkedIn as well. The cool thing is when you get one of these, you can kind of copy and paste between, so you're not having to retype everything all the time. Another thing that, I'm sorry, go ahead. You will copy and paste, and I would recommend going through the text editor and just Notepad or something like that first to strip out any formatting. Although LinkedIn, it does keep bullets, at least it used to, but you, while you're working with it, it won't be visible, so you can get it to the way you want and then, you know, save your changes, and then it will be visible. But yeah, you can upload. Mm-hmm. You probably know more about LinkedIn right now. You won't know more by the follow-up session when I'm doing it, but I have not done a lot on LinkedIn since I'm not in job search right now. But I have looked at it in the last couple of days. But it changes all the time. You know, the interface every 6 months, it's not a huge change, but they'll add security. They'll add a different way that you can organize your information that will make it easier for people to find you or for employers to look at your stuff.
Can I say one thing?
Yes.
My brother played professional sports, and he got on LinkedIn. And one of the no-nos that I told him really quickly is he has a lot of followers on Twitter and through stuff like that. And on LinkedIn, which speaks to your point, you can link your other social networks to LinkedIn. But if we're following her advice, which we should, that you keep LinkedIn strictly professional, you don't want to do that even though that feature is available. So he has a professional site because he does a lot of other things like motivational speaking because of the platform he has. But then you would see, like, you know, Twitter, they put everything out there. And it would
the athletes,
be
yeah.
LinkedIn stuff. And I'm like, no, stop this, please. Because you don't want the personal conversations comments. So I just wanted to point that out, that you might not want to link your Facebook, your tweets, which you can do, to LinkedIn, because people start seeing all kinds of personal things.
Mm-hmm.
And LinkedIn is not the forum for it.
You're absolutely right. And you can keep things separate. You can. I mean, for myself, I really look at Twitter and Facebook as also professional. I don't really use them for, like, family-type stuff. So in my case, I probably could do it that way. If you are very active for personal things on Facebook and Twitter for personal interests, I also would not link it necessarily.
Kim?
Yes.
How many of you have a LinkedIn page? Raise your hand. Most everybody?
Yeah.
Okay, those of you who don't have your hand up, what's up? I mean, that is the number one way I recruit. Number one. I really don't do a whole lot. I mean, that's it. I go there. Okay, you got to have a LinkedIn page. I don't care what you're looking for. Get a great headshot. Put some information out there. Have somebody help you do it. But you have to have a LinkedIn page. And put your hand back up if you have one. Okay, now put it down if it's out of date. Put it down.
I'll be honest.
It has to be up to date. You're always in a job search. When you have a job or when you don't have a job. You have one product to market. Always has to be top shelf out there.
Okay. And if you do that, the recruiters will come to you.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, in light of that, I guess I have a question, and you can cut me off.
It's okay.
This is really not the appropriate time.
You have questions?
Because I'm not a LinkedIn expert. My understanding is there's ways to upgrade your account, provide some added features, but I don't know if you can quickly speak to, is the basic service...
Basic service is sufficient for a job hunter?
Okay.
If you're recruiting people, then you need the recruiter platform, but it's the basic service is absolutely sufficient.
But it does sound, in light of your previous response in terms of how crucial you feel that it is, that it the information you put out there related to yourself, resume, it needs to be fairly comprehensive.
It needs to be essential of who you are. It's not, just like a resume wouldn't be 20 pages long, you don't want your LinkedIn page to be 20 pages. Think of it as... The bait. You know, it's an overview of you, and somebody's going to say, "Oh, that's very interesting." If you got your whole document, all your information of your whole life out there, that's not good.
And important to personalize it. That you indicated, I think you made reference to a picture, and some people put pictures out, some people don't.
Yeah, there's
it's important to have a picture.
The profile, you know, typically has a headshot out there, but you really want a headshot. You don't want your, you know, standing there with a fishing pole and a picture that's big. You want a good professional headshot. Go somewhere and
Or you can just take one in your bathroom like I did. I just did this myself.
Was that in the shower or was that not?
This is standing in front of a brown door. And I just set up the camera and did the little timer thing and then just cropped it down. And you know, it's not that hard. It's like you had a question first.
I didn't really think LinkedIn was important.
Oh.
Not really networking and stuff, but after being in this class, I'm thinking, would I do, would I create a resume that was more on what my abilities are, since I don't want to stay in the secretarial field anyway, and put that on LinkedIn?
I think a good thing to do would be to create your resume first. I mean, get a LinkedIn profile and just have it, you know, just title, your name, your title, you know, and you can do it incrementally. It's not like you have to have everything all filled out. But get your LinkedIn profile, and then when you have your resume developed, and you can change it all the time if you want to. But then once you have your resume, fill that in. And it will group things. You will group things how LinkedIn wants to group them. It's not a question of functional or chronological or, you know, that kind of thing. It guides you step by step. I have my summary, you know, my experience, and this is just years. And honors, let's see, publications, certifications. People have recommended me for all these things. You know, and then groups. I have a ton of groups. Not all of them are visible. But you can see, I mean, this is what somebody sees. Somebody just going to, this is my public profile. So if somebody was to, you know, just a stranger was to look at this, you know, there's really nothing here that I would not, you know, my phone number's not there. Even my email is not there. They can send me a LinkedIn message, but... Cool. Excellent. Yeah. Let's see. This is. That's the same one.
Content.
Uh huh.
I've seen, and this may be the human resources question, but I've seen some people have their experience and then they have a large description of what they've done, not necessarily the bullet points, versus what yours is just kind of, here's my experience. Is there a preference? Is there?
That's up to you. You know, that's up to you and how you want to be perceived. And if you have it one way and it's not working, change it. You know? Yes, ma'am?
The thing that I like most about LinkedIn with that is, and people, I have a really great LinkedIn. I mean, not to praise myself, people tell me that. And when I go on there, when people come and visit my site, you can see who's visited your page. I'll see them change stuff to mirror. So my point is, you can go to that CEO or whoever you want to be, or whoever's page you like, and copy things that they did in that format. It's all
oh, you're
there.
Stealing my thunder, lady.
So that's what you do. And then you can change your settings. So for instance, you can just have the name and then one-liner, and that's, I'm looking for a career or expert in this and that area. So you can have her, like hers is this long, yours could be this long, meaning your public profile. You can only show details to people who you let in your network. It's all customizable, so you can have as much, as little.
No, that's okay. No, actually, and that is in the follow-up sessions, too. But, you know, if you think about it, this is what we always used to do. You'd go to the library. You'd get a book of sample resumes. You'd see how other people worded things, you know, different ways that they presented that, and you'd pick and cherry-pick, you know, just how what seemed to work for you. And then the cool thing about this electronic format is not like the old days where you'd go and have 100 resumes printed out on nice paper, and then you're stuck with that. You know, you can change this all the time, and the same with an electronic resume. But this is what a person would see if they were, you know, if we're not logged in. This is what I see when I am logged in. This is all the people that I'm linked to, and there's my friend Julie. She has a nice new picture, and. This is all the people that I'm linked to, their updates that they put in. I put in one last night about this workshop, and I just typed it right in here. It's asking me if I want to also have a tweet about it, in which I did. But it you don't have to really, you know, there's got all these ads. If you do the paid version, I think it doesn't necessarily have the ads. We'll go into a lot of more detail about LinkedIn. I did want to show you that This right here, it shows me all these people who looked at my, here's Emily Robinson, you know, Jeffrey and Catherine's daughter. So she was looking at, here's Marty, people endorsing me for skills. This one, this is, pardon?
That was me.
It was you. Oh my goodness. So, oh, cool. Right now, how about that? So here are people, like, some of them I know. These are people who are, these are messages. These are people who want to link to me. Is that you?
Yeah.
All right. Accept. I'm accepting that right now. And so right now, she would be able to see just my public. If I had any of my profile that was not public, she would now be able to see that. And she can also see anybody that is my contact.
Which is an interesting point.
Which is a very interesting point.
You need to be selective among who you link with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because that's a reflection of this person. It, who you're linked into your LinkedIn page.
Well, it depends, Marty, because there are two different ways to look at LinkedIn. Classically, it was designed to only... You were only supposed to link to people that you could actually vouch for their work. Then the big recession in 08 and 09 hit. And then people just wanted to link to everybody. Because the advantage is that now that I'm linked to you, if you know somebody who worked at a... If you're linked to somebody who worked at a certain company, I will now see their full name instead of just their first name and their last initial. So... And salespeople particularly use LinkedIn in this latter way that I've just described. They'll link to everybody. My boss will link to everybody because he wants to go through your contacts. And, you know, but on the other hand, if you're in job search mode, I mean, you want to be able to see all the contacts that you... And the thing about LinkedIn is I think, and I might be wrong about this, but I think that if you unlink to somebody, there's not like the big unfriending on Facebook. You know, it's not like that. You know, maybe you just hit your 500 that you can get for free, and you know you need to lop some inactive contacts off. There's no limit now on a free account. There used to be a 500 limit. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I would just like the same thing.
Ah. Yeah, there used to be. So, see, I need, well, by the follow-up session, I will have studied up. Let's see. Let's go back to the PowerPoint. Oops, that's not the one. Resume slideshow. That's what I want to do. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This may be just for me, and I don't know if anybody else, but if you are looking for two different, you're looking at two different career fields, mm-hmm. like I am, should you put both of them on the same LinkedIn?
Oh, yeah.
Do you have two different pages?
You do not want two different LinkedIn pages. It looks like you made a mistake and forgot one. And there's no reason why you shouldn't. So many people are changing career fields now. It's just not any kind of a stigma anymore. So it kind of almost shows you're a more well-rounded person. I'm a little bit behind now, so I'm going to get going. You can see 92% of companies recruit on social media. Are you prepared? This is from August 5th, you know, just this month. This is a nice, the colors are kind of unfortunate. They don't show up real well, but you can see while job seekers flock to Facebook, recruiters prefer LinkedIn. And here's Facebook. Job seekers is the green line. It's 83%. Facebook, employers, it's 65. LinkedIn, job seekers, 36%. So you guys are way better than the average. But LinkedIn's 94% of recruiters. 94%. So that's even up 1 or 2% from a year ago when we did this this same workshop. So this is the way to go. I would say that... An exception to that might be someone who is looking for a blue-collar manufacturing job, someone who wanted to work in the fast food industry. maybe you wouldn't need LinkedIn at that point, but really any other type of a job, any more of a professional job, I would think you'd want to be on LinkedIn. And this goes to a question actually that someone had earlier. An invisible job seeker today is one often viewed by recruiters and potential employers with some suspicion because it is rare and is often it's not a good sign. Are you out of touch, behind the times, or using a false name? So if you're not out there, it's going to look odd to people. Facebook, it's odd. The younger people, they are finding jobs through Facebook. And Facebook is good for your warm network. That's part of your warm network. So look at it that way. I read something where an employer will forgive someone for mild pictures of like college age inebriation before they will forgive them for grammatical and spelling errors, even on Facebook. So your grammar and your spelling matters. Twitter, I have my Twitter account here. And that's the same picture. And see, Twitter changed its layout, and now it's like real big and yuck. So I need to change that. You can see that I just tweeted this last night. I went to George's Donuts. let's see, there's a course that I took, a conference that I went to. So, I mean, I sprinkle in a few sci-fi type tweets. Sorry? Aren't they awesome? They're the best. Oh, yeah. It's okay. And as she said earlier, Google yourself. Yes? Nothing. Use that. I hadn't looked at this in probably 3 months until I started preparing for this workshop, which is not good. I should be better at it than that. But, you know, like maybe an hour a month, you know? What you don't want to do is have somebody asking to connect with you, like, is it Rebecca? Jacqueline did, and then neglect them for several months. You know, that's just kind of rude. They do. They have apps. Mm-hmm. And any more questions? Let's go on and talk about job postings, classified ads. Remember these? Do they even have these anymore? I think they do. The important thing, if you are answering classified ad, whether it's online or whether it's in the printed newspaper, do what it says. If they say don't call, don't call. If they say don't walk in, just send your stuff, don't walk in. That, you know, because it shows right up front that you can't follow directions and you maybe have possibly an attitude problem. So just whatever they ask for, follow that along with that. I even had that. Online job boards. There's traditional ones like Monster and Career Builder. There are aggregators like Indeed, Simply Hired, and CareerJet. And then there's what I found, because I heard this on the radio on Thursday, ZipRecruiter. Hundreds of jobs where it includes Monster, it includes Simply Hired, it includes Career Builder. It includes all these different ones. So, and they have, when you first go to that site, it assumes that you're an employer and you want to post a job. But, you know, you just go to the tab where it says job seeker and you get this view. So if you go to that one, I mean, I haven't really looked into it a lot, but I'm thinking, boy, that'd save a lot of time. And this, were you the one who had a question about how long it was going to take you? And, you know, using an aggregator will greatly reduce the time. Did you have a question then? No? Okay. I just don't want to be insensitive and just be running off. There are also field-specific ones, DICE is for tech jobs. Work Hands, I found this last year. I did not look at it again, but this is for very blue-collar type jobs. There are also ones for entry-level, career rookie, people who are fresh out of college. And there are new ones all the time. So you just Google, job board, the field, and see what comes up. Yes?
Just wanted to mention that I think it's Simply Hired. They have an app.
Mm-hmm.
You do it on your smartphone. But LinkedIn also, they put a picture of me next to a different company's name and said, hey, wouldn't you like to work here?
Oh, my goodness.
So, they actually, are matching you.
Wow. Job openings. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll come up in your flow, like in that list, but so that there's even more. How about that, Islan?
Does it matter? I've seen a job posting through a company's website, but I've also seen the same posting through one of the career sites. Is it better to go through the company website or go through or both?
That's our next slide. So you guys are too good. There's also, as you said, jobs on LinkedIn. It used to be that employers could post jobs on LinkedIn for free. I believe that's no longer the case, that there is a fee now for them to post it. However, I believe that if jobs can still be posted through LinkedIn groups for free, but only group members would see that. And we will learn about LinkedIn groups at a follow-up session. Let's go on to setting up notifications, and I'm getting to you. It varies per board, and it's going to change from year to year. So what I learned last year about all of that, it would probably no longer apply. You just go to the help on the board and see how to set up your notifications, and it will email you a digest of, maybe once a day, once a week, whatever you set up, of jobs that meet certain criteria, either the title, the education, whatever criteria you set up. Or you can just set up a Google alert. Like I did this yesterday. I took this instructional design job openings, and then I tell it once a day, English language, it allows you to pick a region, and then you would just, you would set up the alert while you were logged into Gmail, I think. Maybe you can do this without Gmail because it's asking for an email account. And then you create your alert, and then it just sends you a list, and then it will have links to all the different jobs that meet your criteria, any page on the internet that has that criteria. When you're responding to openings, you want to make sure they're fresh postings because companies leave them out there for a year, and that job might be gone. The company might be gone. Well, the company's probably not gone if it's still there, but... they don't always take them down in a timely fashion. It'll have a date on it. And sometimes it'll say respond by such and such a date, but sometimes it doesn't. But you can tell, it always will have a date when they posted it.
So it's a reasonable amount of time because I heard...
It depends on the job. That's true, yeah, and probably for a higher level position, if you've got a director or vice president level, they'll look for a year, as opposed to an entry level, it might be gone in a month. You had a question, ma'am?
That was the question. What was the threshold?
And it's going to depend. It's going to depend on what. But would you not want one that was more recent? I mean, if you're looking at a list of them, and these three are from this month, and this one is from 6 months ago. You're going to concentrate on the ones that are more recent. Cool.
There's a lot of these pay sites as well.
Ah, yes. He is just so good. He's just... mm-hmm. For anything that is a lesser-known site, not one of the major ones, you want to be careful. You should never have to pay to post your resume. You should, you know, why would you? You know, I suppose it would be kind of like using an employment service where you have paid them to find you a job. But if there are this many that are free and these are the ones that the major companies use, why would you pay? I don't know. I at least that's what I've always been told. Is that true?
Sales sites are out there, are very specialized.
Like yes.
The ladders have very specific
yes.
areas of focus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's well worth the investment if you, in fact, are at a certain point in your career.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
To be on some of those sites. But it is a personal decision. You have to determine which particular sites most align with your background. Ladders is one of the better ones for executive level type positions, mm-hmm. but there's many of them out there. So the issue is you wouldn't go buy all the sites thinking you're going to get more activity. It's you've got a product to sell, okay? If you wouldn't go into a grocery store to find furniture, right? So go to the place where your product is more likely to be purchased and join that site if you're going to make an investment.
Okay. Let's see. Maximize your return. Good. You respond to the postings that match your resume closely and go directly through the employer's website if possible, rather than through the job board. Although many employers, and especially the larger companies, essentially you go to Monster and it takes you to their site. It looks like Monster, but it actually is like the Eaton site or something like that. So because if you go to their site, you can see it has different questions and they match. If you go to Monster and do the Eaton job, then so it's interesting how that works. I would say that if you went to the actual employer's site, it might allow you a few more fields of customization than a more generic site, but it might not. Do you have a feeling on that, Marty?
Yeah, absolutely. You should go to an employer's site. I mean, you shouldn't ignore any sites for starters. Okay, but nowadays, what's really happening is most employers have some type of a what's referred to as HRIS system, Human Resource Information System, that captures all of the information associated with that company's personnel. Typically, they have a recruiting module associated with that, and that recruiting module allows an employer to post positions within their system internally, but also map it to CareerBuilder, Indeed.com, and others. So when you go to Indeed.com and you click on the site, you're actually being taken back to the company's pages.
See, I was right.
Okay, so you're not actually filling it out in Indeed. So you're better off going directly to the company site if you know that the organization has an opening, because you're pretty much looking at their portal anyway. Mm-hmm. You can do it either way. What will happen is if you approach it from the CareerBuilder site, you'll get to the company's internal system anyway, but it will say you came in through CareerBuilder. Mm-hmm. That's all. So it's really not a bad thing.
And there's also, it's kind of two little aspects, because if you're going to Monster and posting your resume, that's different from going into a job posting and actually filling out an application. So you it's a little bit too different. You should keep good track of where and when you've posted which version of your resume. So if you've posted your resume on Monster, and it's been a couple of years and you have a newer one over here, anybody who's going to Google you is going to see multiple versions of stuff. So keep track of where you've posted it and keep it updated and keep it aligned. Remember to take your resumes down or change them after you found a position. Yes?
Going back to that posting for a second. If you're going to fill out something online like that in the company's system, be accurate. Thorough about your spelling, all that. A lot of them don't have spell checks in certain aspects. Mm-hmm. So, how you respond, what you put down is very, very important. The information you put in is often parsed off of what you wrote in and goes right into their applicant tracking system. So if your information's all whacked and then you come up with a resume that's outdated or not quite what you put in there, It's very uncomfortable. It's very confusing. It's very it's an indication of your degree of accuracy and attention to detail. So be mm-hmm. careful. Do it right. Do it thorough. Spell properly. Spell check.
One thing that and I'm a big fan of Notepad, the text editor. Mm-hmm. So, and what I'll do is I'll just have like a resume, or I'll have all the information that I would put into an online application. I'll have it in a file. So I can just paste this block of text in, and I can have had, you know, take that out of Microsoft Word so I had my spell check and everything. You don't necessarily want to go right from Word into one of the, because it will mess it up. It won't be good because Word messes things up. But if we'll talk more about that too in the follow-up session. But Notepad is our friend. This is one of Kim's things. Job board hygiene. All right, employment services. There are many types. Employment agency, that's traditional, where they you go to them, and they help you find a job. An executive search firm is one executive search firm is one that's more engaged by the employer to go find somebody. So there's it's a slightly different point of view, and I'm probably not being very accurate because this is Marty's total area of expertise, but I need to go really fast. So there's a contingency search firm where, this is where the search firm, there's contingency in the retained. The retained is hired by the company at all times to look for a person. The contingency is only when they need someone. Is that correct?
That's close. Well, let me just,
okay.
For the sake of it, contingency means the firm does not earn a fee until they place someone.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it on the if-come. Retained means the company has paid that firm already some percentage of the fee to go out and do the search. If you have a retained recruiter call you, that's pretty good, okay, because they know what they're looking for. They've already been paid to do it. If you are getting a call by a retained search firm, chances are your information is probably close to what they want.
How do you know?
Well, you're not going to know. But if they tell you that one, I mean, you're not going to know until you talk to them.
So they got high Joe Blow from calling for such and such a company and has asked.
Most companies, most
retained my services for.
That's it. Most companies, if they retain, there's a prestige associated with having, you know, having actually been paid already to go out and find someone.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That's the basic difference.
So they've evidently been known to find good candidates in the past so that the company would trust them.
Mm-hmm. Is it okay to call the search firm yourself?
You should be sending your documentation to specific and very specific search firms. Search firms work in particular areas, right? They work in accounting. They work in finance. They work in HR. So if you're going to call anyone, focus on search firms that tend to focus on your career field in general. What you really should do is send them documentation, because search firms make their money by being on the phone, by looking in LinkedIn, by investing their time doing that, rather than waiting for the phone to ring. The search firms do not find you a job, okay? That's not what they do. So a lot of people have that misimpression that I'm going to call them, I'm going to give them my resume, they're going to go out and find a job because I'm a perfect candidate. That's not how it works. It's the other way around. Okay? Mm-hmm. So they have a job. They're trying to find the right person. So the best thing you can do is get your information in their hands by specialization and follow up at some point with an email or some other contact point. But to expect to get them on the phone, usually you don't normally get through. Or if you do get through, it's probably a first-level research person. Somebody that you really had maybe been there a year, and they're going to find out either they want to be in recruiting or they don't.
There's also retained firms or search firms that do by industry. So,
yeah. And you can find that list in the National Association of Personnel Consultants, NAPC. you can find that in the library or online.
Or online, probably. Yeah. And I'm just thinking, boy, I really should have given you this microphone so we could have gotten all your contributions on the tape. So then a headhunter and a recruiter is another type of a person. And is this just a name for a person who works at a search firm?
Yeah.
I mean, a recruiter is oftentimes inside of companies. You know, that'll be a designation that they'll have in their HR department. Let's see. And then there's also temporary agencies. And really, so many companies now are doing temporary to hire. for, I don't know about top-level positions, but any kind of mid or lower level positions. I mean, they always have had the, you know, what, 60 or 90 day, you know, probation period or whatnot. But now that days they'll even have 6 months to a year of where they're just, you know, it'll be a good salary. You might be paid by the agency, or you might be paid by the company themselves. But it's really not a stigma anymore to take a contract to hire job. It's very, very common because there's so many people out of work, and companies, and my own company has done that as well. You know, just making sure the person is a good fit, corporate culture wise, as well as all of their job skills.
Used to be the temp agencies were only for first level, lower level type positions, clerical, administrative, but that is not the case any longer.
It's true.
There are firms out there that specialize in very high level temp people. The issue though there at the very high level is that it's usually in a defined area like accounting or finance or marketing, where they're coming in on a particular project rather than having to have some expertise or represent the company in a sales role. It's normally some support type role. Mm-hmm. But temp to hire is a great way to go when you're trying to recruit a lot of first line people.
So it does
test them out before you actually buy them.
Exactly, and it doesn't mean that it's not a real job, and it doesn't mean anything bad about the employer.
There's, oh gosh, you just open your phone book online. There's zillions of them out there. Robert Half is one of the more typical ones.
Mm-hmm, Robert Half. These are the kinds of jobs that you used to see in the newspaper where it would be a staffing agency and it'd have the description, but it would say a major manufacturer or something like that. Well, some major manufacturer has hired them, so that's that kind of an idea. And then also, your college career center, it is not too late to go to college career center, no matter how many years it has been since you graduated. You know, there are ties there. And also, that is online networking, you know, not just classmates or high school, but either LinkedIn groups or other types of networking from your college if you have that. Let's move on to the direct marketing to target employers. And, I think I can still do this and still get us out to lunch on time. What companies are you going to contact? Well, that would be from your marketing plan, right? Because you've done the research, in which we're going to talk about how to do the research right now. You would contact them either by phone or mail or email, snail mail. This method might seem like a long shot, but sometimes it works. I don't know. It depends on the kind of... To me, this seems like a long shot, Marty, and I know you don't think so. So it depends on the level of position that you're at. If you do it right, which is the marketing letter that Ken and Bonnie talked about earlier, and also a good cover letter in your resume.
Can we
ask
a question?
Yes,
about that,
sure.
You said if we do it right, so what's the right way? And then it's direct, and a lot of times you can't get to the person directly that you need to speak to, so what's the best way?
All right, so we're talking really about multiple methods to market yourself, right? So there are degrees of marketing.
I'm giving you the mic, Marty.
There are degrees of marketability.
There are degrees of marketability.
Okay. So there are degrees of marketability associated with the product you're selling. Okay. Think about something as basic as Campbell's soup. Okay. How do they sell soup? 50 different ways: TV, radio, coupons, people standing in the grocery store handing samples out. This is just another method. Okay. It's just another marketing method. Part of your marketing process in identifying all these different channels is to identify specific organizations where your product would be attractive. Like I said earlier, you wouldn't go into a grocery store to buy furniture. You'd go into a furniture store. So you want to identify, typically by industry specification, what particular organizations in a given geographic market tend to be the kinds of places that might hire you. It doesn't mean that they have a posting in CareerBuilder that says, we're looking for you right now, come and apply. So you're targeting employers, and then you're putting together some research on each of those organizations. So you, there's a reason for your call, and then you're also researching and identifying who the hiring authority might be in your area of discipline. Okay, so you're sending an introductory letter, marketing letter, to that hiring authority in your discipline in the hopes that you'll get their attention. So it's, again, it's like a brochure, like Ken mentioned earlier. It's a quick overview, a summary of your background. The close of a marketing letter in this process says, you know, please anticipate my phone call within the next week to discuss the possibility of joining your organization or discussing my background. Now you're going to call and follow up to talk to that particular individual, but when you do that and the person answers the phone, the administrative support or whoever's taking the call initially, obviously you're telling them, hey, well, they're anticipating my call. I told them I was calling. Yeah, they're expecting my call. 9 times out of 10, you'll get through. Okay, now you're talking to that authority. They may not have anything, but you can turn that opportunity into a networking situation. But it comes down to identifying key employers that relate to the kind of work you want to do. It's, you know, it's really like, you know, this is really, it's relatively straightforward overall. You've got a product. Who wants the product? Think of it backwards. You know, think of it with the end in mind. If you're going to get a job doing what you want to do, where is that more likely to be found? And then go after those employers. If you do your homework, which, by the way, this is work, right? You got to research the company, know more about what they're doing, where are they in their current competitive posturing, have they done anything lately, look them up in Cranes, has there been any recent articles on them, learn something about the organization and put that into your introduction. So when that person opens that letter, it's different. So you stand out. But it comes with targeting the particular companies, typically by SIC code. I think we're going to talk about that in a minute. So you can identify a handful of employers and then send your letters out and follow up. Not one, you know, trickle at a time, 20, 30, 40, 50 letters simultaneously, but do it well organized, well researched. So that's really the marketing approach, okay?
Cool.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Marty.
Typically not. No, because you don't know. It's not like you're trying to get, well, you are trying to get a job, but you're really trying to impress them that they should see you. You know, everybody puts a lot
of emphasis on resumes.
Yeah, you got to have one. It's kind of like, well, you know, you wouldn't walk across glass without shoes on your feet, right? I mean, that'd be kind of silly. You could hurt yourself, right? Any kind of glass for that matter. But at the end of the day, resumes are not you. You are you. You've got to sell yourself. So you have to have a resume because everybody's got to have one. But the marketing letter is an opportunity to reflect who you are and what you've done, that you're different than the average person just sent in a resume, that you did a little homework, that you did your, you know, you prepared for that contact. So that's why you typically just send the marketing letter. So it's a very effective approach. I used it for 10 years with my clients. So we'll talk about that later.
Excellent. No, because I'm sure we'll need Marty some more. I have a mic right here. So, I'm going to talk about, let's see, research sources. And as someone mentioned already, that this is the Cuyahoga County Public Library Career Center, which is headquartered in the Maple Heights branch. But they have lots of workshops and all different kinds of stuff. Oh, my goodness. They can, you know, all the tests that you have to pay big money for, they have them for free. You don't even have to live in Cuyahoga County. They have people, career counselors, degreed career counselors that will meet with you one-on-one. It's a wonderful, wonderful resource. They have access to a lot of stuff there. I think that I've, let's see, let's go to the newspapers. Well, where am I going here? All right, I didn't want to go there. Let's go back. They actually, at Maple Heights, they have access to, or maybe all of the libraries now, they have access to the databases that companies pay thousands of dollars, like the Dun & Bradstreet and Hoover's and stuff like that. And you can access those at the library for free, as far as when you're researching companies. Yes, ma'am?
I forgot about that. I used it years ago
And I have multiple different types of assessments, and because it's part of my thing that you'll hear after lunch, because I did use their services as well. Of course, you want to go, you know, through newspapers. Cranes Cleveland Business is a real good source. They have it at the library. There's online sources, which you will find these things if you Google. You know, you will find these things. This is every week the Plain Dealer has this On the Move column where it talks about people who got promotions into they're now vice president of this company and now they're this, you know. You know what? I mean, if that person is networked to somebody that you know on LinkedIn, well, now you know somebody at that company. So it's more like a little detective work trying to put things together. I was going to go to this page, but I think I will not. The Plain Dealer also supposedly has lists of networking events for business. It is empty right now. I don't know what's up with them online. So I'll figure it out by the time we have a follow-up meeting. Professional journals, which is another really good source, they will have them at the library. You know, you don't have to, and they'll have information about your information about trends, and just Google anything. That's basically, you know, what did we do before this? It was really hard to find out about companies. You had to go to the library and look through these big, thick books and with all these number codes and everything like that. And now you can just find things by Googling. But you want to budget your time. Set a time frame, 2 to 3 hours maybe, to look for an industry. So it's not like you're spending all day, unless you want to spend all day long. If you let this get out of hand, it can be overwhelming to you and then just paralyze you because there's so much information out there. We have to trust that the Lord will lead us to the things that, you know, that will help us. So research, find out about the industry and about companies within the industry, but budget your time. As Marty said, there's the NAICS code or the SIC codes. I understand now that the SIC codes are not used anywhere other than in government. The NAICS code is now the current one. They're used by business and government, including the census. It classifies businesses by the type of economic activity that they do. So a bank is different from a manufacturing company, is different from a restaurant. There are 6-digit codes. I got this last night on the census site. North American Industry Classification System, that's what NAICS stands for. And you can see you can put in codes, if you know the code for the industry, and it will bring up results. This page is more targeted towards companies and not towards individual, but I could be wrong.
People, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, it's for industries, it's company specifics. It's for industries and companies within industries.
Yeah, so... But, I'm not used to that.
Do you have a sample of the listing of structure?
Do I? No. I tried searching for a couple of things, but I wasn't finding anything.
Yep.
We can look at that at the follow-up session.
The thing I like about it is, like, if you're looking at a company in particular, you can see their growth over time, how many employees they have, how much their annual revenue is, how long they've been established, just basic over time, so it's just good, and then you can see their competitors and, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. So are you in a stable place? How did they do last year versus this year?
Mm-hmm. And then their competitors, that's also other companies to potentially target if they're in your the geographic area that you want to be in. So it's even better information. When you're researching the company, the first thing, man, you want to go through is company's website. Why would you not? Because on their homepage is what they want you to know about them. You know, they're about us, you know, and most companies have that kind of information out there. That's what they want you to know. And that's going to be an indication of their corporate culture. You know, that's how they're presenting themselves to the world. Then you can also, of course, get news, press releases. Sometimes that'll be on the company's website, or that can just come up in your Google search. The Wall Street Journal, again, or Cranes Cleveland Business. the Hoovers and Dun & Bradstreet, the paid databases that you have access to at the library, there are a lot of places to find information. You just Google the company name, you know, or Google that in a city, you know, to find out what they're doing in a local area. But and then also, most companies, most of the bigger companies, actually have a social media presence. They'll have a Twitter account. They'll have a Facebook page, but it's a company page where they don't have friends. They have, like, fans or something. They will have a LinkedIn page for the company, not just for the people. And companies do have that. So these are all places where you can go to find a lot of information. So once again, budget your time. You know, spend, you know, an entire day researching a company, you know, budget your time. Let's see. All right, good. Yay, we're not going to be late for lunch. All right. The next thing I wanted to talk about is to research the industry in the field. You want to use news articles, trade websites, e-zines. Like, here's one for HR. There's one for CIO, which is for information technology. You know, there are all kinds of e-magazines, and there's more of them all the time. And some of them are more valuable than others. And the only way you're going to know is by just, you know, taking a look at the articles, seeing who the authors are. What you're looking for is market and competitor information, trends in your field. You're looking for challenges. What kind of challenges are companies facing? You know, what are problems that you might be able to help them solve? Who are the thought leaders in your field? If a field has that. I mean, my field definitely does. My last couple of fields have had that. You know, people who are, you know, the trendsetters, the ones who are that everybody else wants to. They're setting the best practices. What are the hot topics? Hot topics could come up in an interview. You know, it could very well come up in an interview. At least it would in my industry, Marty. It definitely would. But absolutely. And buzzwords, and these are also things, if you're at a networking event, knowing these kinds of things will come in very handy. You mean you'll understand what the people around you are. Even if you just have a little bit, just a little bit, will give that feeling of comfort that you'll be able to enter into conversations and learn more. I think that might be. That said, here we have this quote: most people get jobs through people they know. Through a web search, though a web search can alert you to opportunities and let other people know that you're looking for work, it can't replace personal relationships and the work of following up. Just like Mari just said, you send the marketing letter, you follow up with a phone call. You know, it's very important. Another thing that you can do is to research the interviewer. You can find information on Google, LinkedIn. You can think like a detective. Who are your favorite detectives? Who has a favorite detective? Columbo, yeah. And I've got Sherlock Holmes there. I've got Chet and Bernie, the dog detective. I like him too. But you want to think like a detective, but don't be creepy. You know, you don't want to be creepy about it to where you're actually like almost, you know, sending someone repeated messages or something like that. But, you know, if you look at somebody's LinkedIn profile, well, that's cool. Somebody looked at my LinkedIn profile. You know, I'm trending up. More people are looking at it. After this class, maybe I'll go up even higher. Something that that you can, oh, I skipped something. I added something another thing when you're doing your research in the industry in the field, that's when you're going to be finding your salary ranges. So when you're researching about the industry and the field, many times professional organizations or some of these online e-magazines, they'll have a salary survey that people will, you know, fill out, and then they'll post it like once a year. Our annual salary survey for your area, you know, this is the low range and the high range of people with your education level. And then that information is available online. So, and that will help you if you do have to fill in a salary on one of the online applications.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
What's the primary benefit of researching your interviewer? Because they work for the company and they're in the job function that you're not going to be doing necessarily.
Well, if it's somebody that you're going to be talking to, say I was looking for a job and I had an interview scheduled with somebody, I'm going to look them up on LinkedIn for sure. So I can see, are they in any professional organizations that I'm in? Have they published an article that I might want to read? Has their name appeared in a newspaper article that they just got a promotion or something? And I can know that before I even come in the door. I might be able to tell which of those industry hot topics might come up so that I've got that in the back of my mind. I didn't know. Do you have anything on that?
What you're trying to do is get information for relationship building. This will be
exactly.
Once we get to the interview segment this afternoon and interviewing, I'll be talking about how that can be applied. But I can tell you that, you know, again, in my position as I look at people and I recruit for people, I'll get dinged when somebody hits my LinkedIn site. And it's a really good sign when somebody that's going to come and interview with me has looked at my site.
Mm-hmm.
I think that person's like three steps ahead of most of the population. Because they're getting ready and getting prepared to come and talk with me about whatever it is we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So they can use that. Much like you would research a company and on the entry paragraph of the marketing letter say, hey, I heard you guys grew another 20% this year. This is great, and blah, blah, blah. You might find out something about an individual. You absolutely want to look at their LinkedIn site.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it wouldn't hurt to Google them either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am?
I was just going to add to that, too, the gaps or the fit, you know, where the headaches are, so to speak, in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
That may not always come out, you know, but as you have this ongoing relationship, it does come out.
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely. I have looked at that a little bit. It's interesting because do they actually have jobs now? I'm going to have to add that to what we do in the follow-up session. Glassdoor is a, do you want to describe what it is now? I'll let that gentleman do it. Almost like an exit interview, you know, after you exit a company, it's almost like a ratings, like, you know, how did you like this vacuum cleaner? But it's about companies. Like, yeah. I used to work there and this was my experience. And it's like we said earlier, I mean, somebody could be really, you know, they didn't perform well.
You can just say, nice place to work, nice people, but not a long-term
kind of mm-hmm.
place.
No opportunities for advancement or the corporate culture. That's a great place to look for information on corporate culture.
Yeah. Just be careful.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a gripe page primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you really have to work hard to try and get people who are in your company are happy to go out and talk positively to counterset that.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily, don't believe everything you read on Glassdoor because mm-hmm. 90% of it is probably not completely accurate.
I think that's why I looked at it a couple times, and it just seemed to be so overwhelmingly negative that I just thought, you know.
Mm. Like I said, they have an app now with jobs.
Well, I'm definitely looking that up. Thank you for that insight. Does anybody else have anything?
It shows salary. Like, I think that's already been said, but it's valuable.
Yeah. Oh, they on Glassdoor, it shows salary?
I've seen it.
Oh.
If you don't register.
See, this is yet another good reason to have this job search email, because then you're not giving out your own email, you know, to hither and yon to all these different, you know, I unfortunately have 7 email accounts, and it's pretty confusing. I would not recommend that at all. But if it's manageable for you, having that separate one just for your job search or just for business, it will separates that for you, so that if you have to join, you know, do have a login or something for a free site, you're not giving out your personal email that your family would use. Anybody else have anything? Yes, sir.
We've all, realization is not the first experience, or conversation we had here that looking for a new job is a full-time job, so it's often crucial to try to optimize the management of your time, mm-hmm. and try to be as effective as possible with the effort you put into it. Along the lines of the different resources available, in particular, I was focusing on recruiters, and more so in light of that, is there any tips, strategies related to maybe dealing or working with recruiters? Like, you know, there's parallel question is there's tons and tons of job searches, so engines or sites to use in an ideal sense. I'd like to know which ones maybe are the most effective, and some of that, you know, you're not going to know by trial and error, but and I have mm-hmm. the same kind of question related to recruiters. Are there things, which ones are good to work with? Are there ones out there that you should avoid, or
I'm going to defer to Mr. Marty for that question, because I really don't know.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately,
microphone.
Oops, sorry.
It's okay. It's all right.
Unfortunately, there's no real list of good or bad recruiters. There's no rating system. Maybe you could start a web page and make $1 million.
You got on Glassdoor for recruiters.
Sounds like an opportunity knocking on the door. Recruiters. One advice I can give you about using recruiting firms is, you know, usually the ones that have been in business longer are more reputable. You can often find reviews for various firms on what's the organization? Better Business Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
You can look them up that way. What you want to do is when you're talking with a recruiter, you know, you want to find out, have they been in the business a while? But you can't say, have you been in the business a while? So how long have you been with this organization? You know, a lot of people get into recruiting because what happens is recruiting firms, you know, people approach recruiting firms because they're looking for work. So they fall into recruiting. People fall into it because they're looking for a job, and they take a job at a recruiting firm, okay, and they try it, and it doesn't work, you know, because it's not easy, okay? So often when you go to a recruiting firm, you're getting the first line of defense there. You're getting somebody that's probably new to the firm. They've probably been, you know, they're there to get data research for the real recruiters who are building the relationships with the clients. You want to get to that person that's got the relationship. So ideally, that's what you got to do. But good and bad, you know, it's going to come down to reaction. Good recruiters, of course, will get back with you. They'll talk professionally with you. You won't be an annoyance to them. They realize that they're planting seeds for today and for tomorrow. That's what most recruiters will do that have any credibility.
Can I say one thing about bad recruiters? Retained recruiters just about always are pretty good, but contingency guys get paid when they have your name in front of the company and get hired. And so the bad ones are the ones who throw your name around anybody that you might want to be talking to just in case they actually hire you so they can get paid. So that's the bad ones. And there are
So you're saying they'll try to put a square peg into a round hole just to get paid.
Just to get your name out there. Mm-hmm. Or who might you want to talk to? Zoom, get your name out there, and be the first one to get your name there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, being in the nature of my background, being in IT, it's an industry where recruiters are very heavily involved.
Sure.
And so it's easy to get bombarded left and right with phone calls. And, and so part of the reaggression of again, with like work with sites, you can't work with everybody in the world. So it's how to determine the good ones and get a select few that they're going to be effective and productive for you. Thank you.
And you can look at, you know, it just again, it's a little research, right? You identify those in your industry. You do a little Google on them. Look at their website. How much can you learn about them? Are they, you know, what are people saying about them? There's, like Ken said, there are some search firms that will take your, well, in the old days, they take your resume, they mass copy and mail it to every HR person in town, figuring throw enough spaghetti on the wall, something sticks. And now you can't get in there without them paying a fee to get you.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be careful. just those selected few that, you know, again, they're not out there looking for a job for you. You're just building a network. It's another possible way to market your product.
There are also, I mean, I've been contacted by recruiters and headhunters on LinkedIn. You know, they'll send you an LinkedIn message saying, I have this opening. You know, I mean, I'm trying to fill this in your area. So, you know, it's another thing that can happen.